Hour 3. RBKD. Patrick Davis just crushing it behind the glass on a way back Wednesday. Wednesday is where we play old school hip hop, and you may have the best one to date. I'm talking BK. I'm talking anyone who's been producing. Like, you've nailed it.
I told
today.
You he could. He
lots of pressure.
You got to remember yesterday too.
You got to remember we're all from around the same time frame, so we have that same window. I was like, my window is really like 95. To 2002.
Yeah,
that's probably really it then. Where I listen the most.
Yeah, no, that was kind of Robbie's prime. So, yeah, no, that's when I was out and about. And this was, man, this is a jam. This was playing the club. Man, is this a one-hit wonder, too?
Yeah, I mean,
DJ Cool.
Yeah, DJ Cool. I don't know how much else he had.
But he hit it, man. He knocked it out of the park, though.
You can still hear it anytime you hear it. It gets you.
It's still there. And now it's a wedding song. Like,
yeah,
it
makes
song,
sense.
You know, exactly, right? Because right, it's a wedding song. I go to weddings.
After the wedding.
Like the reception.
Like walking down the aisle.
Yeah, that
like, man, they really like this.
That'd be a great wedding. Yeah. That'd be that wedding I want to go to. But yeah, at the reception, like, this is one of the songs you're like, oh, my God, it was crazy. Because, yeah, probably because our age range.
You may kiss people. The bride, and you start jamming this.
Let me clear my throat.
Yeah. That may not be the song to play, actually, there, now that I think about it here. Hey, it's Kevin Dunn. It's Rod Babers. We got Patrick Davis here. We're two in. We got two to go. Chuck Woolery style. We're talking a lot of NIL today. We'll start to get into a little bit tomorrow, the NFL weekend and what we're seeing there. But really, it's been about the changing landscape off of the field in college football, and yes, something sir. That Rod Texas needs. You and I have both said it as this was kind of going down throughout the year, but as NIL was coming around too, this is even before the year, I knew Texas had to retool the roster. Did I think they needed to retool it this much? No,
not
I didn't.
Retool. Rebuild.
Rebuild.
They're rebuild mode. That's what they're saying. That's what Sark is saying.
There's been no other year. This is kind of weird because this is kind of one of those things that you give people hope and optimism in life, but you're also letting them know you're still in a really tough spot. Texas is in a tough spot,
it
right?
Is.
And you're 5-7. And I think this
lost
coach.
Lost to Kansas.
That's all you got to say.
That's all you
got to
say.
Like, enough said.
You lost Kansas.
So this coaching staff recognizes you got to have a serious overhaul on the roster. Mm. We've talked about how you still have to try and develop as many guys here. Because even with the portal and even with everything you can do now, you still can't turn it around in 1 year. But the biggest part of the turnaround, the biggest question for me was, unless people are loading up bags, and that was always under the table, you don't see a turnaround where all of a sudden you don't get good pub, you don't have a good year, and you're getting a bunch of recruits. Texas can
work
do
like
that.
It
didn't work like that.
That's not the way it works. Back in the day, it didn't. It's a new era.
Could with NIL.
It could, man.
And you still got to sell these kids.
Yeah, it's so different, right? We talked earlier, so I'm old man, so I'll bring up my day. Back in, you know, I was being recruited, part of that 99 class. Mac Brown had a ton of buzz in the offseason, and it does kind of remind me of the buzz that Texas is building right now, but it made sense, right? You had Ricky Williams just win the Heisman campaign.
He went 9-3.
He just won the Heisman, yeah. Exactly right. You
won the
9-3. You had a lot of positive momentum, and I, you know, I threw this out there too. There was the, and this is what Quinn Ewers could represent. There was kind of I call it the We Are the World theory that when they were making We Are the World,
Stevie,
there was, you know, they were basically reaching out to everybody trying to figure out, okay, so how are we gonna bring all these stars together to make this, you know, make this big project, right? We Are the World song with this superstardom with celebrities galore. And they went initially to Quincy Jones and said, Quincy Jones, man, you know everybody in music. Like, what do we do? Can you just call all your friends? He was like, I ain't got to call all of them. I just got to get two of them on board, Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson. He said, when I do that, the rest of them will call me and say, hey, Quincy, what the hell, man? You wasn't going to hit me up? You know, and that's exactly what happened.
Aykroyd called them. And Aykroyd may have been a commitment before those two. Every time I've seen them, I'm like, what the hell is Dan Aykroyd doing there?
That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it worked. They got Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder, and then everybody, Bruce Springsteen and Tina Turner and Diana Ross and Willie Nelson, everybody reached out like, hey, Quincy, I thought we were cool, man. You weren't going to let me know about this project where you and Michael Jackson said, so oh, yeah, I was going to call. Use my next call, man. Use my next call. And he treated everybody else the same way, and they all called him. That's what Quinn Ewers could represent to this recruiting class. That's what Corey Redding and Chris Sims were to the 99 class. Once you got those two in, everybody else, including myself, we jumped on board because I wanted to play with Chris Sims, and I wanted to be a part of what was happening at Texas. You know, Quinn Ewers could be that. He could be that kind of, you know, you could be that coup if you want, that coup d'etat.
So the thought is, so Quinn Ewers is going to visit Texas on Saturday. Shout out to all the people that cover Texas. I know Anwar was one of them.
Oh, yes.
But there are a couple others as well.
Anwar had a night. Well, Anwar probably had the report that got people the most excited. Yeah, the most buzz out there. He threw this out there this morning. Former Ohio State quarterback Quinn Ewers is scheduled to visit Texas on Saturday. According to sources close to the situation, Ewers is deciding between Texas and Texas Tech, but TCU was recently eliminated. Those close to the situation hope Ewers decides by Monday. Remember, he did have a visit to TCU, a visit to Tech. There was actually talk of an in-home visit.
I think Tech's going to visit in-home.
And then,
and so, Texas already had that.
And Texas already had that. So he's coming to Texas to complete that. And yes, it is real. The interest that he has in Texas Tech, and of course, there is mutual interest, but he's really considering going to Texas Tech. It's a real competition between Texas and Texas Tech. And I'll say it, it's an upset if he doesn't go to Texas.
Yeah, it is. Especially with Kittley, though, getting the job. That was the connection with Patrick Mahomes that I think there's I think he's very serious with Texas Tech, but I'm with you. The fact that he grew up a Texas fan. I know Tech is creating some name, image, and likeness stuff, which is going to help out. Probably not anything more than Texas. I would guess less. And Ewers is the type of guy. Look, he's already made reportedly over $1 million, and he's taken three snaps. He hadn't thrown a pass in college football yet, Rod.
I know people don't like the way that he's going about it. This is just a new era, folks. He is maximizing his brand. He's going to end up with the transfer, rule, made a transfer without penalty, being able to maximize that too. He's probably going to end up making $4 or $5 million before he even takes any relevant snaps, hopefully here at Texas.
Right. And then if you do tear it up, I mean, that was the question about Bryce Young. Probably the biggest thing I'll give Bryce Young is that Bryce Young had made $1 million. Before he had taken real serious snaps.
Exactly. Yep.
And now he's about to win the Heisman.
Yeah, Nick Saban.
So he's got a couple years left, and that's going to be...
Oh, he'll make $5 million before he leaves.
You know what it is?
Because now with the Heisman, you're right, he'll make more. I'm sorry, probably more than that now.
So you know the situations where we've gotten, and we've had the Elway, we've had the Mannings kind of do their thing and try and manipulate the draft to where... their son doesn't go to where they don't want him to go.
Yeah.
This could be, if there is one of those organizations that you know is picking first and you're already making $4 or $5 million and you're a redshirt sophomore.
Oh, this is true.
This could be like, you know what? Yep. I'm not going to the Jets.
Totally agree with that.
I'm not going to the Texans. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to come back another year. I'm making $5 mil.
Yeah, you're not that desperate. Yeah, that's a great point, man. You could
and
have.
I've already made $15 mil.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't doubt if you could get a couple of guys that usually decide they were going to go to NFL and go, no, I'm actually making good money. I'm making good money. I'm having fun. I'm making $1 million+. Like, I'm okay. I know I can make, 10 to 15 million instead of the 3 million, but I'm having fun here. So this could actually work out for college football, where some of your bigger names could decide, instead of skipping bowl games and skipping their senior season and leaving, they could decide, no, I'm going to stay.
I hope it happens in college basketball.
I'm making good money. Like, right. That was the whole purpose. Like, no, I want to go make money as soon as I can off of my name, image, likeness, but also my snaps, right? I want to get paid for these snaps and paid for reps. If you're getting not technically paid for those reps, but through name, image, and likeness, you're getting paid. I'm with you. The incentive to leave, to me, isn't as desperate. It's not as urgent. But I could be wrong about that. Some guys' situation is different. But for Rod B., now, not that Rod B. was going to leave early anyway, but for me, if I was in that situation, if I was making $1 million at Texas, I'd be cool with staying another year.
Yeah.
It's college, man. Love it.
Right. And as we talked about with Melendez, those numbers could be $15,000 and $25,000. It can be different numbers, but he's going to make a ton of money. Their camp's going to want to make a decision early next week, and I like that because wherever he goes, both those programs, both Texas and Texas Tech, they need someone, as you just said, kind of steering the recruiting ship and being that guy to go recruit other people, whether that's Kelvin Banks, whether that's you try and get back in on Stewart. But receivers and offensive linemen specifically, and then obviously talk the defensive guys as well.
The offensive players want to play with big-time quarterbacks. When Sims came into that 99 class, you get B.J. Sloan, Sloan Thomas, and Roy next year because they want to play with Chris Sims. That's just the way it works out. So, you get Quinn Ewers. I guarantee you a lot of big-time receivers will start changing their mind. Offensive linemen will start changing their mind. running, well, you already got a lot of good running backs actually already committed, but you get my point.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you can't have too many.
You can't have too many.
If there's a
that's a good
junior
point.
Or senior, so this would be huge, man.
Yeah, it was also reported by my man Chip Brown over at Horns 24/7, and this was earlier this week in his insider piece, that Sark does plan on bringing in a veteran quarterback in the transfer portal, basically two quarterbacks, yours, hopefully, and then another veteran quarterback in addition to Malik Murphy in 2022. So he's trying to essentially overhaul that quarterback room. I think his thoughts are, at least if I'm trying to psychoanalyze Sark, I think he's thinking either Hudson Card or Casey Thompson and or Charles Wright, one of those three, hell, maybe even two of those three, will decide to leave in the next year and hit transfer portal, because that's just what the numbers tell you about quarterbacks. I mean, your blue chip quarterback, 50% transfer rate for blue chip quarterbacks, and that number is going to rise now that you have the ability to transfer without penalty.
And a lot of those blue chips are in at a program where the quarterback room is stacked, and someone like, so Quinn Ewers is a good example where it's about C.J. Stroud just being too good and too many quarterbacks there. He wants to get on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, it's you guys weren't as good as we want. Sark has come out and said that, and they're essentially looking to replace you.
Well, I think that's the way. I mean,
that's,
no, I'm
that's
with
the
you.
Difference, though.
I totally agree with you. There is a difference,
this
right?
This is about bad performance.
Texas was at that point, you know, early on in Mac's tenure. You would have quarterbacks transfer, you know, and then they'd end up going G.J. Kinney, guys like that, Jevin Snead earlier. I think Adam Hall, actually, from Westlake, transferred to San Diego State. But it was because that room had a Chris Sims in there, and, you know, a Vince Young came, and then a Chance Mock was in that room, and an old Major Applewhite. You just had so much talent. That's where you want to get back to. That was Texas was in quarterback utopia. It was a quarterback heaven.
Right.
Right now,
it also wasn't as easy to transfer out.
Exactly, and it wasn't, you know, the stigma was then attached to transferring. Like, that was you had a reputation if you went through the transfer portal.
Because now
something went wrong.
And I don't want to speak for him, but it would make total sense if Chance Mock, once Vince won that, he said,
have.
You know, I'm going to go play somewhere.
Yep, he definitely would have. Hell, you might not have been able to keep Chris Sims here. I don't know. I mean, it just would have been a different world if you would have been able to have that accessibility to the transfer portal. But I think Texas now could be in a quarterback purgatory, but maybe not, because if Quinn Ewers come, then essentially you're not in that quarterback purgatory anymore. Right now you are. If he decides to go to Tech, I think you're in a bit of a quarterback purgatory, because it's clear Sark doesn't like the quarterbacks he has right now.
Right. Well, the good and bad thing about quarterback room now, and we've talked about it, is you can be in hell, purgatory, or heaven and flip pretty quickly.
Oh yeah.
To one of the other.
Oh, no doubt. In the season.
Right.
Now there are a ton of quarterbacks in the transfer
portal.
In
a way,
really
you're almost always in purgatory. At least you're scared about being there.
I call it the more money, more problems theory. You know, people with a lot of money complain they got to pay a lot of taxes. Yeah, and a lot of these blue blood programs bringing in these blue chip quarterbacks, these high profile quarterbacks, and stacking the room with them. Only one of them can play, and whichever one of them is not playing, they're unhappy. So they're going to end up leaving. All these blue blood programs: Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, USC, everybody's dealing with this problem.
Mm-hmm.
This is a more money, more problems kind of thing. Everybody has the same issue. If you're the quarterback that ain't playing, he wants out.
Right.
Period. There ain't nothing you can do about it.
And with the coaching carousel, the way it's all changed, so now I'm curious, is Caleb Williams, does he look at Jeff Lebby and say, okay, I'm going to stay?
Good point.
We still haven't talked about Spencer Rattler. I mean, I haven't heard any connection with Rattler in Texas. I heard Arizona State early on, but Daniels is coming back, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you're right about
and
that.
And the other one I heard was UCLA, which I thought was interesting.
It's interesting. That is interesting.
But I don't know if Chip's going to be there.
Oh, because, yeah.
There are so many butts and so much movement.
Mm.
Gotta like a lot of butts and movement, right?
I like big butts, and I cannot lie.
That Texas is, they're getting in on kids that they probably shouldn't, because of the way they played and the way they looked. And some of these kids that chose other spots said, no, thank you, Texas.
There's a lot of chaos, and Texas can take advantage of it.
A lot of chaos. It's a great year to be 5-7.
It's a great time to rebuild.
Don't put that up on the stadium. Don't turn that into a T-shirt, Mike Murphy.
Yeah.
But it's a good year to be 5-7.
Come on. You know the Aggies have put up a banner for that.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
They probably have. They
well
probably
done,
already
sir.
Got one.
Well done.
But no, I think it's...
One of those five was a spring game.
No, it is. It's important, though, that Sark. I like the way he's approached it because Tom Herman actually had a really good approach to stockpiling quarterbacks in the room. He didn't really care about guys' feelings and where they were. He just kind of brought quarterbacks in. And I think he had like three different guys transfer while Tom Herman was here. Shane Bouchel, Jaquindon Jackson, Cameron Rising. Yeah, so I'm saying, like, good quarterbacks. That's the approach you got to have. Just stockpile it. Worry about the issues that are going to come up later on if they do arise. And you want first world problems at quarterback. Like, we got too many good quarterbacks, as opposed to third world problems at quarterback. Like, we don't have enough good quarterbacks. We don't have any good quarterbacks. And that's where Sark needs to be.
I wonder who that veteran could be.
Well, you got Matt. Was it Max Johnson?
Max Johnson, Max the Johnson, LSU kid. And then Miles Brennan's the other LSU guy.
Yeah, and I don't know if you consider them veterans. I mean, he's just a sophomore, but I mean, he had 27 touchdowns, six
He
picks.
Got better throughout the year, and that was with Boutte out.
You have, what is Dylan Gabriel?
Dylan Gabriel
is in the transfer
UCF.
Portal. There is a Jake Haener.
Yeah, Haener. And I
is
thought
in
maybe.
There, and he's a veteran guy.
I thought maybe he was going to follow his coach to Washington. Yeah. But he's come out and said, no, I haven't signed anywhere. Haener, to me,
he's a veteran,
is
presence.
The best out of all the choices you just gave. Rattler would be fantastic, but Rattler's going to want to come in here and play.
Yeah.
And start. It's his job.
Say, he's going to want it guaranteed.
Right.
Before he gets here that he's going to play. He almost, I don't know if you can have it written, but he would basically want it. And I think it scares him a little, the competition here. Not scares, but it's something he wants to avoid. Like, mm-hmm. He doesn't want to have to deal with the competition. Like, he wants the job, like you said.
Well, especially with what he's coming off of this year.
He's got a little QB PTSD.
Yeah, he does.
The last couple of years. But I think you look at the last 15 years for Texas, and I've thrown this out there because it's just a mind-blowing stat to me. They have signed 21 different quarterbacks, but only one of those quarterbacks has ended up being a multiple-year starter, and that was Sam Ehlinger. It just shows you that old quote Bill Walsh had about the quarterback position. Very few people can coach the quarterback position, and even fewer can evaluate them. You got a good one in Sark who can coach and evaluate the quarterback position. But the success rate of having a quarterback that can be a multiple year starter for you is at Texas right now, last 15 years, really, really low. It's probably at a 25% success rate if you're trying to think about quarterbacks that can give you legitimate starts and potentially compete to be a multiple year starter for you. You just haven't had that type of high end quarterback play in a while.
No.
Sam Ehlinger was it. Sam Ehlinger, Shane Bouchel. That was the bridge that got you to, and then this year you had the drop off, of course, because you didn't have a consistent quarterback play.
Yeah,
right. It just wasn't consistent enough. Had great flashes. I mean, Casey Thompson, it was amazing. The Oklahoma game.
So we're talking about all these different offensive linemen. They got the 4-star to commit. I believe was that Ajabo who was looking at Oklahoma or was committed to Oklahoma at one point. Mm-hmm. Obviously Banks. This could be, and quarterback play especially. This could be almost similar to what Chris Beard did, where you're trying. Mm-hmm. The starting 22 could look drastically different than the ones we got this year, even more so than a team that's trying to turn over a roster.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And Sark even hinted, you know, before the season's over, they're going to have a lot of roster turnover. We've had five transfers so far.
Or guys enter the portal.
Enter the portal. Haven't officially transferred, but five guys into the portal so far. So, and three on defense, I believe. Adelia Adeleway, Marcus Tillman, and Marcus Caldwell.
Yep.
The DBs. And Elvonte Woodard and Rafidi Gamai will see the offensive linemen. So,
good memory.
That's five guys that enter the transfer portal. I'm assuming you're going to get more than that. And he can only bring in as
eight.
Eight is the max. Okay. There you go.
And so, yeah, so you're looking to bring in 33 guys, a number that he brought up. That's why I was laughing at the time when he goes, oh, yeah, we're going to look to bring in 33.
The max.
So, yeah, if they would allow him 71, I would love to know if he would have said, yeah, we may not hit 71, but we're going to be in the 60s.
Yeah, the number was basically the max that I can turn over is what I will turn over. that's what it went down for him. All right, we'll get into some more matter-of-fact football discussion on the other side. I want to talk about name, image, and likeness and how it's changing the landscape of college sports, specifically here at Texas, and a warning to my man Sark about building a program in the name, image, and likeness era. We'll get into that on the other side in Rod's Rant of the Day right here. Here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I'm going to talk about the name, image, and likeness movement, this Category 5 force of nature that's really, really, it might destroy amateurism forever. It'll never be the same, or maybe it'll never exist again. Essentially, I actually was talking to a friend of mine, and I don't want to get political here, but I'm going to make a comparison, so please, I'm not trying to side one way or the other. And just the actual... really the impact, the overall impact of name, image, and likeness on amateurism. I compared it to, I was talking to a friend of mine, compared it to what Citizens United did to the political structure and our campaign structure here in America, right? What it did, basically, it reversed centuries-old finance restrictions that now allowed corporations and outside groups, right, outside groups and special interests to spend unlimited amounts of money, unlimited funds on elections. And before that, was it 2010 that it passed? I mean, there was some restrictions, right? Yeah. Some guardrails in place to try to limit that type of influence, the dark money, all that kind of stuff, and Citizens United kind of opened the door. Name, image, and likeness, in a sense, in terms of the impact of it, will also do something similar to amateurism and to college sports as we know. It's going to have that. It's not going to destroy it, and Citizens United didn't destroy democracy. It's not going to totally corrupt it. I know some people are like, oh, yeah, I'm not getting into that. All right. It still has mechanisms in place, but it's going to change it forever. And that's certainly the case with Citizens United. It's certainly the case for name, image, and likeness. And it just works as a way now for the boosters and the donors to funnel money through to student athletes under the veil of name, image, and likeness. Now, are there charitable
arms? In the veil of charity to some degree.
Yeah, exactly, right, exactly. So I know there's a charitable arm to it, and that's great. With Horns with Heart, it's fantastic. And they have the Pancake Factory that they're actually executing, which are going to throw, I think, $50,000. And a partnership with their favorite charitable organizations, with specifically to offensive linemen, which is something Texas needs. They only got two of them committed in the 2022 class. That's no coincidence, the timing of that. But also the Clark Field Collective. It's also going to work as a kind of an intermediary to pair businesses, which boosters and donors, businesses with name, image, and likeness endorsements for student athletes, right? Work as an intermediary. And all those things are great, and Texas is going to lead the way, as they should, because I think it is their goal to be the name, image, and likeness capital of college sports. I think that is the goal of Austin, Texas, of Texas, of University of Texas. I think that's something that actually is realistic for the University of Texas at Austin. But here's the thing, and this is something that, like I said, you're going to get a ton of money. This is the beginning of this money. It's not just at Texas. It can happen. This is going to happen all across college sports, specifically in college football, where you have the most money, but especially with Blue Bloods, the old money.
Right.
Maybe not Notre Dame. You say they could be a little different. Maybe they're a little slow to the party. But most places, the old money is about to kick in here. And
Notre Dame could jump in on this could. Like Texas.
At any time they want
they
to.
Will.
And any time they want to. And they'll still, I think they will. At one point they'll realize, well, we got no choice. We have to do this. This is just now the game. In the way it's played.
But they've been bitching about academics and reasons why it's hard to recruit guys.
Exactly.
Well, this is what I'm talking about, separators.
Yeah.
Use your separators.
Yeah. No doubt. Exactly. Right. And I think that's what people are trying to do right now. Texas is doing it. I want to applaud them for that. But the economic windfall, though, is, like I said, after prohibition or decriminalization of any service or commodity, it's going to be immense. And that's what's happening here, right? We saw it with the legalization, decriminalization of marijuana, legalized marijuana, recreational marijuana across America. And now you look at it and, man, Colorado and California, the revenue they're making from marijuana makes it the fastest growing business in the country, fastest growing industry in the country. New Jersey is now the sports betting capital of America.
In fairness, it has been for 40 years. It's just legal now.
It is. It's true. Good point. It is. It's a great point. Now it's legal, and now you can tax it and make some money off of it. Uncle Sam always likes that. But here's my, that's all something that could have been predicted. And yes, this, just like, I mean, Citizens United, now you've got campaign funding that has gone through the roof, and some people would argue it's excessive, but you're going to have the same thing happen with name, image, and likeness, and that's what's happening here at Texas. So I don't think anything's wrong with it. We can see it coming. Here's my warning for Sark, because here at Texas specifically, There has been the toxicity of entitlement for a while. Nobody can deny that. Even, you know, Charlie Strong has talked about it. Even Tom Herman hinted at it, that when you come to Texas, there is a country club culture, and you try to fight against that. DeLoss Dodds even said it's tough because it's, you know, it's a good life in Austin.
Yeah.
It's a great city to live in. University of Texas is a great university. You have to fight against complacency.
And it's not just the athletes that are coming in, and obviously they're going to be 17 or 18, so there's a better chance that that could happen. It's coaches, too.
It's coaches, too. Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, I always say DeLoss hired, or maybe Chris Plonsky, but hired a national champion soccer coach who's at Notre Dame, right, and had used Dallas, essentially all of Dallas girls, to win a national championship.
Yeah.
You come down to Texas, you're thinking, just wasn't there. And so there are probably a couple of reasons that went into that, but there's a thought that, no, you come down to retire.
Something's happening, though, because we're realizing, give CDC credit, that the other sports are able to thrive now. All right? Now this thing seems to be isolated to just football.
Yeah.
And that's where you got it, because there's the most money in football, right? There is the most margin for error in football.
There's also the most competition.
Most competition. Thank you very much. Most competition in football. So, and this is why Texas has a chance to separate in the name, image, and likeness era. But here's my warning for Sark. With that, understanding the history of Texas, understanding there is that entitlement, there is a history of that complacency, the success flu, as Nick Saban calls it. You got to make sure you're recruiting the right players.
No doubt.
And you got to make sure that they are coming to Texas for the right reasons, and make sure that you know why they play the game. And this sounds like BS, but I'm going to tell you why it matters, right?
No, because it's 100% right.
You need to make sure that these guys, that they're playing the game for the right reasons, so when they get the money, they're going to get the $50,000, $150,000 a year now. For some of these guys, that was what drove them. They were like, oh, I'm trying to get paid.
Right.
And remember, we always have said at
and
Texas,
if you go out and produce, that's okay.
It's okay. But we've said at Texas at times that players oftentimes, they will act like they made it when they got to Texas. I made it. This was my goal, was to get here, right? I made it. I'm here at Texas. Boom. And oftentimes the result on the field, the product on the field will reflect that. They would play like that. But for when I played, the goal wasn't to make it to Texas. The goal was to play for championships at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal for me was to play in the NFL. That was always the goal. If Matt Brown sat down, we'd say, what's your goal, Robbie? Why do you play the game? Well, why do I play the game? I play the game because I love the game. I love the game. I love football. I do. I love it. You guys can hear it. I love everything about it. I always want to be around the game. I had a passionate love affair with the game. If you got guys on your team that just love the game like that, then the money will come, and the money is it's great. It's a fortunate byproduct of your ability and your passion and commitment, but that's not why you play the game.
It'll all flow from you just wanting to be addicted to the game.
Money Mayweather, right? Now, people make fun of Money Mayweather, and he's a despicable human being, but the lesson you learn from Money Mayweather is that for him, he's got a competitive sickness that even though he flaunts the money, the competitive sickness in him is all about being the best, right? He just wants to be undefeated. He wants to be unblemished. That's what matters most to him, even more than the money. The money come along with it, but it's the being unblemished. And to the point where I love this part about it, right? The competitive sickness, because he's proven, because you look at fighters are a great experiment to look at in terms of competitive sickness, because fighters, most of them come from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody fighting really came from an affluent, rich background, because you don't want to fight when you grow up and you have means and resources. You only want to fight when you're fighting for your life every day.
This is a way to get out.
Right? It's a way to get, but you get so used to fighting that fighting's nothing for you. You'll fight because you fight every day.
Mm-hmm.
And scratching and clawing every day. And if you go look at it, Money Mayweather, the last fight he had against a fighter, I believe it was De La Hoya in 2007, the last fight he had against a fighter that didn't have their biggest payday was that De La Hoya fight. Ever since then, every fighter he's fought, it's been their biggest payday of their career when they fight Money Mayweather.
So they made it before the fight.
They're done. The rumor is, the folklore is, they get the check in the account before the fight.
Oh, that'd be smart.
Psychologically, he wants them to have it.
Absolutely.
So that they're hugging they're calling their mama and hugging their wife and say, babe, we made it. We won the lottery.
You're set for life.
Right before you got to go in there and fight the fight of your life, you're satisfied. Because you were in it for the money. I mean, you're a fighter. I was like, no, I'm just trying to make it. I'm just, and
it's also your job.
And I say this about Conor McGregor, and I love Conor McGregor. I think he's great. But Conor McGregor essentially has kind of all but admitted he was in it for the money. And Conor McGregor, I know why, because in 2013 he was on welfare, making $235, I think, every welfare check, and he was a plumber in Ireland. Hell yeah, he's in it for the money.
Yeah.
So when he got that FU money from Money Mayweather, of course he's not a great fighter anymore. What are you talking about? He was in it for the money, man. He's cash. He's one of the richest human beings on the planet. I'm good. Sorry. I don't have that hatred in my heart to fight anymore like I used to.
Same thing happens with rappers.
It does. Happened with Eminem.
Eminem's talked about that. Yeah. He's like, I literally have an elevator in my house.
Yeah.
You're not going to get 8 miles.
You don't.
Me.
But you gotta understand, for those guys, and it's fine, that they may have been in it for a certain reason. For Sark, it's going to be imperative to find out why these guys are playing the game. In the name, image, and likeness era, where they're going to come in, they're going to make, $1 million or $500,000 before they leave. You got to make sure you're bringing in guys who have the competitive sickness. And you may not have the Kobe Bryant competitive sickness, where you're shooting 600 shots every time you go out for practice and you're getting up at 4 in the morning. No. But you got to have some of it. You got to be able to identify some of it, the Rod Babers level of competitive sickness, at least, where you guys are obsessive about watching film and they're obsessed about being the best. If you're bringing in guys who are strictly in it for the fame and the money, I guarantee you they're going to lose that motivation. They're going to have it. They're going to have a hard time intrinsically motivating themselves in a name, image, and likeness era. So people say it's crazy. It's not. Think about this. Some people are in it, you know, to get their family out of poverty.
Right.
That's great. What if they make $500,000 in 2 years at Texas? Send the money home to mom. Well, mom's not in poverty anymore. What's his motivation? Is it for the game? Does he love the game? Does he want to be the best? Like, what's this? Find out their motivation in a name, image, and likeness era. Find it out, because that'll help you weed out who you want to come into your program while you're building this culture. Mike Shanahan told me this, and I kind of ended on this because I know I'm all over the place. But I even we got like VY, right? Because VY, people get on VY, but VY won, 62% of his NFL games? Mm-hmm. I know VY. I knew him before he got to Texas. It ain't never been about the money for VY. Hell, he squandered it when he got it. I'm just telling you, I'm not trying to hate on him, but it was about winning for
Period.
VY. It was never about the money. The money came, and he loved it, and he, like I said, he squandered. But it wasn't about the money for him. Hell, you know Ricky? You think it was about the money for Ricky?
No. It's about the herb.
If it wasn't, exactly.
No, it was about winning. Because Ricky's competitive as hell,
I don't know what it was about for Ricky, honestly, but it wasn't about the money.
Yeah.
If it was, he wouldn't have signed with Master P.
No.
No, but you talk about Kobe Bryant, and you look at Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan. Those two guys were about the money, but it was because they wanted to have more money than the other guy.
Right, it was
a competition of money. So there's people in NIL who can be going for money, but they want to have the most money. They go, I want to make the most money because I want to be the best at everything I do.
I think you got to go with the guys that want to be the best, and the money's going to come with it. Michael Jordan's competitive sickness, dude, he worked it like a muscle. That's why he wanted to gamble all the time. That's why anytime he went into any activity with somebody he wanted to bet on, it was a muscle for him. He wanted to work it. He realized competitive sickness is something I got to work or I'll lose it. And if I work it more than everybody else, I'll be more competitive than everybody else.
God, he was working out like a full-time hooker.
That is something you also got to identify, that part of that competitive sickness. So like, here's the part I'll end on. Right? Mike Shanahan, I sat down with him a couple times, asked him, Mike, how do you build a culture? Like, what was your secret? You won Super Bowls. He said, I never worried about building a culture. If you bring in good people, culture takes care of itself. He said, those people who accumulate talent, and then after they accumulate the talent, then later on try to build a culture, honestly, that's like building a house and then trying to put the plumbing in after you're done.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the wrong way to go about it. You got to build that culture as you go. And that means bringing in the right people that fit that. They're going to build your culture on their own. They'll build it for you. You just got to bring in the right people, and it'll organically start happening. That starts with competitive sickness. That starts with leadership. Identify those two things. You need a ton of it here on this team. In the name, image, and likeness era, if you don't identify guys who in it for the love of the game or because they want to be the best or they have the competitive sickness, I'm telling you, they will get satisfied and complacent. It is human nature. Nick Saban calls it the success flu. That's why at Super Bowl parades, Bill Belichick is chanting, no days off. Got to find it.
Yeah.
Got to identify.
That's also playing with his audience a little bit because he likes to troll.
But still.
They're taking a day off.
No,
good stuff there. The reality is this has been, you touched on it a little bit. I've talked about it forever. I know you have too. This has been part of the problem. So we talk about talent. yes, a lot of it is development and scheming the guys up. But a lot of it, too, is that initial evaluation. And that's what you're talking about. When you evaluate, the evaluation you got to get inside a little bit, too, man.
You
got to
get inside of it, man. You got to get into the heart.
And by the way, that was a problem before all of this.
Amen.
Now, this is only going to be, what, times 20?
Oh, it's going to be now exaggerated to the nth degree. I totally agree. So I'm saying, I just make sure that you bring in the right people. Make sure they come to Texas because they want to play for Texas, not at Texas. And why do they play the game? Right. Find out why they play the game.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with you playing it just for the money. That's fine. But you may not want to bring in the guys who just want to play for the money.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm saying.
It's interesting, man. It's really interesting. And Sark has a lot to marinate on right now. That may be at the top of the list if you really want to turn this thing around. And as Rod points out, it's only going to get more difficult with NIL. Are some of the guys coming because of the great herb in Austin, too? Guess what? It is Brownie Day, and boy, we got a big one. Fitting, we go to this story, and we've got Snoop Dogg. I think I see what Patrick's doing there. Although you could have picked a lot of rappers, and I guess weed probably would have been associated to some degree.
But yeah, but it's Snoop. That's part of Snoop's DNA, no doubt. Totally agree with that.
Oh, man. Some of the crap Snoop's put out the last couple of years, this is Snoop Dogg to me.
He's still making music, man. Learned that. No, he is. He's putting out basically an album a year.
But is it good? That's my point.
I wouldn't know.
It ain't this.
I haven't heard
it.
It ain't this. No,
it's not Lottie Dottie. It's not that album.
No,
which
he's in his prime. Now, this is prime Snoop. He's in his prime right now. Yeah. Well, not right now, but when this came out.
Snoop would like this story. So it is National Brownie Day. You know, we got to have a national day for everything, including brownies. Like brownies. You know, brownies are like dogs. Do brownies really need someone doing good marketing for them?
No.
They're brownies.
Everybody loves brownies.
Everyone loves brownies.
I was at a wedding this last past weekend. There was brownies there.
Really?
Yeah, they love brownies. Not these kind of brownies.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, what kind of wedding
not
is
these
this?
These kind of brownies.
So there's a company that unveiled an 850-pound pot brownie as the world's largest. We all want to be record breakers.
Hold up.
850 pounds.
Why?
It contains 20,000 milligrams of THC.
Okay, are we talking about the good stuff? What are we talking about there?
That's a good point. So THC is the element
that, Bobby Brown?
That gets you high, if y'all are wondering. It measures 3 feet wide, 3 feet 15 inches tall, and it just kills the previous one. The previous world's largest brownie was 243 pounds. Of course, Guinness Book of World
Records.
Why is it
so heavy, though? That heavy. 850 pounds is a heavy brownie. Shouldn't be that. Is it like fudge? I mean, what's...
I don't know.
I mean, that's a heavy brownie.
They use 250 pounds of sugar, 212 pounds of butter, almost 1,400 eggs.
I guess you could have it at a wedding.
Yeah.
It could be like a wedding instead of a wedding cake.
Boy, be careful.
It'd be the pot brownie. This is intimidating even for
pot
smokers.
The brownie. I don't even...
Oh, you don't smoke anymore, do you?
No. No. I had issues
Willie
with
Nelson?
That and getting anything done in my life.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
There were certain issues of it. No, I'm deathly afraid of edibles now because I'm just like, is this going to be a week? Is this going to be a week for me that I just decide this is where I lose my job and everything because I just can't wake up? I have enough trouble waking up as is.
I'm at a point now where I only, especially with edibles that I haven't tried before, I only do it like it's got to be Saturday night or Friday night, and I'm at home.
Nothing to do.
And if I don't even have laundry going, if I just put my head down after eating this and wake up 14 hours later, I'll still have a job. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it.
No,
so you have to make sure.
I will say that I've been on my time in California and Colorado, even Washington, when I get edibles, they don't
hit you as much?
No, they don't do anything to me.
Okay. So everyone reacts differently.
I know. And I've actually, because I actually had my mom and dad try some, and they were tripping. Like, it was awesome.
So I've heard that a lot.
Because they haven't had it now that it was legal, I finally convinced them. Oh, man, it was awesome. It was one of the greatest experiences of my life. But I didn't feel anything. I was just laughing at them the whole time. I didn't feel anything. They were out of it.
Mom, Dad, my tolerance can take this.
I don't know what it was. I never feel them, though. I try them when I go to places like that. And I try to strong. I used to say, go give me the strongest one.
Right.
and I feel nothing.
People do react differently.
I feel nothing.
That's with all drugs. I just also know that I've been around enough people that have handed me one thing and then turn around 5 minutes later and go, oh, that's the wrong thing. You're like, cool, I took it already.
I told you to hold it.
What do you mean?
That's for my
horse. So I did that enough in my youth that now I don't trust anybody hands me anything.
That's probably a smart way to go.
Like, oh, no, it's out of this unmarked bag. Here, have this. I don't trust anybody. Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to do with this.
So that's my question. What do you do with
it? They're going to waste it. It's going to upset me.
Charity.
Because it needs to be eaten.
Give it out to charity.
What charitable group is going to take that?
501c3.
What, you got to give it to the homeless?
Yeah, man, go put it.
Why not give it to the homeless?
What's that parking lot there by Red River and just set it out there and everyone's going to be singing Kumbaya by midnight?
You know what? Honestly, you could leave it at like a festival and people will eat it.
Oh, yeah.
Out like a festival, just some music festival, people will eat that all day, even during the COVID time.
But that's how you get ants.
And it's how you get COVID.
That's probably how you can get both right there.
Yeah, it's Ed COVID.
Crazy story, man. All right, we got 1 hour to go here. We'll get back into some pro football stuff. We have an all-pro team that is out. Maybe questions about should the Cowboys sit Zeke? Zeke says, I am playing no matter what. We also have some college updates to start you off with. This is RBKD on the Horn.